I would like to offer today a perspective on the Jewish approach to mourning. What is the purpose of Avelos? What is its aim? What are we to learn about from Tisha B'Av, from the 9 days? It's true that grief is an inbred human response to loss. But the halacha does not merely permit or even encourage grief. Rather, it has developed and codified an entire system of behavior and response to Churban. We are meant then not just to mourn, but to mourn in a particular fashion and to derive certain insights from this process. Before I begin, I feel that it's worthwhile to review some of the basic halachas that are in common with the 9 days with Tisha B'Av and an Avel during the 7 days of mourning. Beginning the 8th day of Av, which this year is Wednesday in the afternoon after Chatzos, the halacha tells us that one should curtail his Torah learning, to learn only certain prakim of Yirmiyahu, to learn the 3rd parak of Maseches Moed Katan, the 5th parak of Maseches Gittin with the famous story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, all these dealing with the suffering of the Jewish nation. The same thing, an Avel during the 7 days of mourning, he also is only permitted to learn these items, or Hilchos Avelos, Medrash Eicha, all these in order to get the person in the mood of what is transpiring. The Rama tells us further that one is not permitted to take a leisurely walk on Tisha B'Av, just like the Avel is to stay inside his house during the 7 days of mourning. It's customary to eat at the Suda Mafsekes, a hard-boiled egg on a low chair, not more than 12 inches, or on the floor, just like the Avel, when he comes back from the cemetery, he too eats an egg, a galgal hachozer, with ash on a low chair or on the ground. It is also forbidden for one to busy himself or herself with housework, making beds, business transactions, at least until Chatzos on Tisha B'Av, some posting believe the whole day. It is also customary not to wear tefillin on Tisha B'Av, at least until after Chatzos, until Mincha, just like the Avel, if the Yom HaMisa, the day, you know, day of death and the day of burial are the same day, he too doesn't wear any tefillin. One does not greet his friend, any Drisha Shalom, just like an Avel during the 7 days of mourning. He doesn't greet his friend. All these are to bring the person into the mood of Avelos. The halacha does recognize, though, that this year, Thursday night, it would be permitted to do things that are covered Shabbos, and therefore that would be permitted Thursday night. These halachas that we shared, though, have one common thread, and that is they encourage the mourner to turn inward, to indulge, if you will, in his pain. He is instructed to purposely inflict discomfort on himself by sitting low, by not bathing himself. By some people have a minhag that if they sleep every night on 2 pillows, they sleep with 1 pillow. Why? To bring the person, his emotions, finally, to bring him to a certain form that would finally make him cry, which is the first stage of mourning. But once reaches that stage, what then? What should he do? We're all familiar with a famous picture, famous story, that when the Israeli soldiers conquered the Kosel Maravi, the Western Wall, during the 6-Day War, everybody cried. We cried because we realized our dream came through. However, there was one non-religious soldier that was crying. And he was asked, why is he crying? He doesn't understand. So he said, I'm crying because I don't know why everybody else is crying. This then is the first step to the path of true mourning. A recognition, if only half formed, that there is something worth crying for. Of course, recognition alone is insufficient. Tears acknowledge, but they don't effect a change. And change, in the end, is the aim of the mourning process. The Torah views mourning as ultimately an opportunity for an insight. It's a refined system to bring a person to an emotional response, intellectual understanding, and then the greater awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the need to hasten his full revelation of his presence so as to finally end all need for mourning. There's a very famous Gemara at the end of Makos that tells us how Rabbi Kiva and other Talmidei Chachamim were going to Yerushalayim, and they came to upon Harat Sofim. And the Gemara says, Shuv Pamachas Hayu Olim Yerushalayim. They were coming to Yerushalayim. Kivin Shiyugiu Laharat Sofim Karu Bigdehem. They tore their clothes, which is brought in the Halacha. Kivin Shiyugiu Laharabayas. When they came to Laharabayas, they saw Ro Shul. They saw a fox. Shiyatz Mibes Kacha Akdashim. Hischilu Heim Bochim. The other Tamidei Chachamim, they all started to cry. Rabbi Kiva mitzachek. Rabbi Kiva laughed. Amr lo mipnei ata mitzachek. How can you, Rabbi Kiva, go ahead and laugh at this time? Amr lahem. He said to them, mipnei ma atem bochem. Why are you crying? Amr lo, the place shekasuv v'hazor hakarav yumos v'achshav shu'olim holchuba. We know that only the Kohen Gadol was permitted to enter into the Kachi Kachim on Yom Kippur. And now we see the Shul, a fox, entering. How could we not cry? And Rabbi Kiva continued, and he said, for this, we know that the Pasuk says that Uri HaNavi tells us that Yerushalayim will be destroyed, but and there will be the ground will be heaps of dirt. But on the other hand, Zechariah's prophecy, Od Yeshu Zakenim Zakenis Berchavu Yerushalayim. There will be a time when the elderly will be sitting leisurely on the streets of Yerushalayim. Rochavu Sa'ir Yumal Yiladim Viladus. The streets will have children playing. At the end, the Talmidei Chachamim said, Rabbi Kiva, Nechamtani, Nechamtani. Rabbi Kiva, you comforted us. What was really the discussion between Rabbi Kiva and the other Talmidei Chachamim? On the simplest level, we can understand that Rabbi Kiva was strengthening the belief in the divinity of the Divrei HaNeviim. The words of Uriah, that there will be destruction. The words of Zechariah, that eventually things will be rebuilt. But on a more profound level, Rabbi Kiva intended to remind us, and to remind really everyone and his companions, the other Talmidei Chachamim, of the true, proper perspective on destruction, beyond tears, even focused tears, to an understanding that that which was lost and an obligation upon us to see that the empty space is filled. La'asos makom b'tachtonim, to make a place for our Kadosh Baruch Hu in the lower worlds. We know that there's a very famous chazal called Mis'abel al Yerushalayim, Zocha V'raya b'simchasa. Whoever will mourn on Yerushalayim will be zocha. He will merit and he will see b'simchasa in the happiness of Yerushalayim. Reb Chaim V'lazhin asks a question: why is this chazal in the present tense? Zocha v'raya. He merits. He sees. It's a present tense. It really should say yizke v'yira. He will see. If he does mourn, he will see and he will merit this happiness of Yerushalayim. Why in the present tense and not in the future tense? And Reb Chaim explains that true, the Beis HaMikdash is right now that it's destroyed, but it's really living. How can I say that? How can I say that Yerushalayim is presently alive? Do we see Mashiach? Do we see the Nevi'im giving us Musar? No. It's not on a physical level. Reb Chaim explained, it's on a spiritual level, within the individual. the wood and the stones may have burned. The ideals, though, of Yerushalayim, that the center of Jewish life, the Makam Hashras Hashchina, that we can properly mourn, that is really alive. And that is up to each and every person to create a Migdash Ma'at. And there, it's alive for the person. Tears can recreate within us a miniature Migdash, which therefore create, so to speak, a space for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to manifest himself. On the other hand, continues Reb Chaim, that if one is unable to mourn properly, it's clearly marked and he's incapable to transmit this constructive energy. Rashi in Chumash tells us that Yaakov Avinu was incapable of accepting any kind of nachama, any kind of comfort for Yosef. Why? Ein adam makabel tanchumim alachai. A person cannot accept any comfort for a person that's still living. Yosef was still living. Yaakov could not accept any kind of comfort. And therefore, Yaakov remained at the first stage of mourning, only able to wail, to weep, but unable to progress. It is incumbent upon each of us during this period of mourning, known as the 9 days, on Tisha B'Av itself, to take the first steps to recapture that which was lost during the destruction, the first base of Mikdash by the Babylonians, the second base of Mikdash by the Romans. But really, what would he have to do? To cease really sobbing, that alone, that would be a sin. But to sob without the purpose, without knowing why, without, that would be a lack of a responsibility. It implies that the death of Yerushalayim, Chas v'Shalom, was purposeless, that it can serve nothing to teach us. And that, again, is not the Jewish perspective. The Pasuk says, V'asu li migdash v'shachanti b'socham, and I should make for you a migdash, and I therefore, if I, we should make for HaKadosh Baruch Hu a migdash, v'shachanti b'socham, and the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will live in our midst. And everybody asks, why is it b'socham? It should really be b'socho. It should really be in each individual. So he says that the pshat is that b'socham HaKadosh Baruch Hu will, is capable of making his presence known and living within each and every individual person. Making each person could make a Migdash Ma'at. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us Chayev Adam Loimar Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. A person must say that the world was made and created for he himself. Chayiv Adam Loimar Bishvili Nivra Olam. It would seem to say that that's a quite a haughty statement. How's it possible that a person could say that the world was created for he himself? To walk around with that? That would be a haughty statement. You have to understand that the Gemara means to tell us that each person was given with his capabilities, with his certain talents, with his money, with other his kochos hanefesh, whatever he entails. It's possible for him to perfect creation to the ultimate intention of the greater revelation of Hashem's concealed presence. That a person, through his talents and capabilities, is possible to create a world, to create a Migdash, to create a Migdash Ma'at. And that's why a person is chayiv adam loimar bishvili nivra olam. A person must say that to himself, because he should not sell himself short. He's capable of building worlds, and he builds worlds. He'll create that migdash miat, a place where there can be a presence for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to live. Often, this must be affected, though, first, by daily, we say in Ashrei, 3 times a day, Karav Hashem l'chol karav v'chol ashir krovu be'emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really close to each and every one of us. Whoever calls to him sincerely, we have to have the will to create that Migdash Ma'at. There's an interesting Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara tells us there how Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol enter the Kodshei Kodshim on Yom Kippur, and the Shechina was there to greet him. And the Shechina asked from Rishmael Kohen Gadol a bracha. What bracha could Rishmael Kohen Gadol give the Shechina? And he said, Yihi ratzel nufanecha, sheyich b'shu racham im eskaskel. May it be the will, Rabbi Shmuel said, that your mercy conquer your anger. V'yigol rachamim al midasecha, and that your attributes overshadow all your midas hadin, how you judge us. This is naig levanav b'midas haracham mivsikonis lehem lefnim mishura sadin v'nelni barosh. You should always judge us with generosity, with leniency, v'nelni barosh. The Shechina was masked. The Gemara is astounding. How is it possible that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, who lives, whose Metzius is the essence of perfection, should need a bracha of a common, even the great Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, but still a person? The Rashba explains that the request for a bracha from the Shechina was really to remind man of his obligation to seek out Hashem. Hashem is pure and has a lot of goodness, and he wants to be meitiv. He wants to share his goodness with us, with man. But first, we must initiate this awareness. We must strive to penetrate this mask of concealment. And that's what Rabbi Shmuel was saying. He acknowledges the awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was saying, I feel your presence. And now that I feel your presence, Ribbono Shel Olam, may you create and judge and be, let the midos of racham, of mercy, overcome any time at the point of your anger. Yich b'shu racham echa es kascha. May your mercy always overshadow your attributes. May you make your presence obvious to all. In this time of tzara, that we find ourselves with our brothers in Eretz Yisrael, at the brink of a full-scale war, it is vital for us to recall this point. In our attempt to build this Migdash Ma'at that we're talking about, and create a place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to live, is the first step among ourselves to see the Yad Hashem in each and every event. We must be mindful of the obvious miracles that we've seen in this war, and really in our daily living, but in this war per se, where the rockets miss their targets, where the soldiers are still able to rescue their injured comrades under heavy shelling. But we also must seek Hashem precisely in those places where it's least visible. Not every rocket misses every soldier. And that is an expression of Yad Hashem as well. It'd be easiest if Hashem behaved toward us with mercy, and he judged us always with leniency. But then life would be too easy. If it were, there'd be no room for our efforts and for the joy and the satisfaction when we see our efforts come through. The Sfas Emes in Bereishis shares with us a very important thought. In the story with the Nachash, the snake, and Adam and Chava, everyone received their punishment. The Nachash received his punishment that he's going to eat from the dust of the earth. And all the Mefarshim wonder, why is that considered a punishment? And the Sfas Emes explains that the reason why that's considered a punishment is because you and I have to come on to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for our daily sustenance. That's part of our life. We ask for Baruch Aleinu in our daily Shemoneh Esrei. The Nachash, on the other hand, will no longer have to come on to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's plenty of dirt. There's plenty of dust for him to eat. he will be cut off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the biggest klala. We say, the Gemara says, HaKol Bidei Shamayim, Chutz Mi'ir Shamayim. Everything is destined for a person. How much parnasa, how much sustenance he'll have, how tall, how rich, whatever he'll be. Chutz Mi'ir Shamayim, except for Yir Shamayim. And that is because how much a person wants to have shaychus and how much he wants to have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is up to him. So the first step in building this Migdash Ma'at that Reb Chaim told us, and that's why it's the live, it's Zoicha V'Raya, is our connection, Ben Adam L'Makam, by strengthening our awareness with Hashem's presence and creating so-called a space for Him to reveal ourselves. But it's only a first step. The Gemara tells us that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of sinas chinam, selfless hatred. We got done saying before that a person is mechuyev to say, Bishvili nivra olam, chayev anam loymar bishvili nivra olam. A person must say that the world was created for himself. How can he say that? We explain, because he has the possibility to create worlds with his actions. How can he create worlds with his actions? With his interaction with individuals. With creating an Avos Yisrael to remove the sinas chinam that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. I would like to share with you some stories that show this point of Avos Yisrael. In the book, All for the Boss, written by Mrs. Shane about her father, Rabbi Herman, he tells us how Rabbi Herman used to have 20 to 30 people at his Shabbos table from all walks of life, all different kinds of individuals. And there was an individual that was emotionally disabled. And one time Rabbi Herman was serving him chalt, and he didn't like the portion of chalt that he received. He took the bowl of chalt and he threw it on Rabbi Herman. You can imagine the other guests at the table, they were aghast of what happened. The room became quiet. And the guest himself realized what he did. And he ran out of the room. Rabbi Herman put down the chalt and he ran after him. And within a few minutes, Rabbi Herman was able to bring back that person. He set a new setting for him. And he told him that perhaps we can find some chalt that you will like. Later on, after the meal, after the Suda, a person asked Rabbi Herman, how were you able to do this? And Rabbi Herman said, it's simple. All you have to have is a little Avos Yisrael. A Talmud of Rabbi Aaron Cutler during the war received papers, visas that were expired. And he thought that maybe he could do something with them. He would be able to run someplace with those visas. Everybody was trying to run any place to be saved. And he went to Rabbi Aaron Cutler and he asked him, what can I do with these papers? And Rabbi Aaron told him, you can't run any place. Because if you get caught, the punishment would be so much more severe. The student, though, felt that he couldn't stay, and he wanted to run. And he decided not to listen to Rabbi Aaron and run. Later on, Rabbi Aaron received a telegram that these papers would somehow allow the person to run someplace, even though they were expired. And Rabbi Aaron ran after that student on different trains, trying to catch up to him, to tell him that no, you will be able to escape. You will be able to run someplace. And more so, to leave him with a good conscience and to give him a bracha so that that student would go and travel with a full heart and not be so worried. That's Avos Yisrael. Rabbi Krohn shares with us a story of Rebbetzin Weinberg, the wife of the Rosh Hashiva of Montreal, who one summer was davening for the Amud for the yahrzeit of one of his parents. And after the davening, he called over a Hatzalah member and he told him he doesn't feel well. And they rushed him to the hospital and they rushed Rebbetzin Weinberg there and they worked on Rabbi Weinberg as much as they can. And after a while, he passed away. The Hatzalah member was given the task of informing Rebbetzin Weinberg of this sad news. As he was approaching Rebbetzin Weinberg, she saw the news on his face and she told him, "It must be so difficult for you to tell me this." And that is really godless of Rebbetzin Weinberg, that she was able to display a certain sensitivity to someone else's awkwardness at her time of pain. And let me conclude with most probably one of the famous stories of the Mir Yeshiva in Eretz Israel during the Six-Day War. Everyone from the yeshiva and from the neighborhood, they all came into the dining room, which at that time was the bomb shelter, and the Mir Yeshiva was on the border during the war, during the Six-Day War. And the Talmidim were learning there, saying Tillim. The neighborhood people were there. And all of a sudden, that bomb shelter received a direct hit. And it shook. And everyone said Kriya Shema, thinking that at that moment, that would be their last living moment. And at that same time, one of the people in the bomb shelter was an aguna, a lady whose husband had left her for 20 years. And she went ahead and said, "Ribono Shel'olam, I forgive my husband for that he left me in limbo for the last 20 years. And just like I forgive him, you, Ribono Shel'olam, you must forgive the Klal Yisrael, the Jewish nation, for everything they have done wrong." Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the big Rosh Hashiva, said, "It wasn't our Tehillim. It wasn't our learning. It wasn't anybody else's chusim, anybody else's merit that we were all saved. We were all saved because of the merit of this lady that was mochum. She forgave her husband." Perhaps Reb Chaim Shmulevitz understood this from a medrash. The medrash tells us that when Klal Yisrael were leaving after the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the Mos and the Avos, they all went to be mispal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But only one person really got a response from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that was Rachel Imenu. She went ahead and she said, "Ribono Shel'olam, Hashem, you must remember the schus that I gave over the simanim, I gave over the signs that were prearranged between myself and my husband Yaakov, in order to avoid Laban's trickery. But I still gave over those signs. In my selflessness, in my willingness to suppress my own pain, for that sake, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not possible that a human being can display any greater mercy than you, Hashem." And on that, Hashem had to respond, "Mini kolich mi bechi, ve'nayich mi dima. Restrain yourself anymore from crying. There is a schar, there is a reward for your actions. And we, her children, will return to Eretz Israel. The geula, the redemption, emerges from our efforts to perfect our world by displaying compassion to others, like Rachel Imenu did. To forgive those who may have wronged us, like the Aguna did in the bomb shelter, by dismissing sometimes cases where we get humiliated, like Rabbi Herman did. All these create a space for Hashem to reveal Himself with ever more clarity, as long as we want Him to. in the merit of our efforts, may the time come soon that Tisha B'Av is no longer a fasting day, but a real yontif, and may we merit to see Yerushalayim in her joy. Zaycha v'raya b'simchasa. Thank you for listening.